Welcome to the Flatus Show. And in this episode, number 4 of the Flatus Show, I'm going to talk about my father, the Stockholm Syndrome, my grandmother, the abortionist, Brenda Starr, and fitness. So, I hope you listen, and stay tuned. The Flatus Show, featuring Ken Steffler and Jose the Poodle. Hi, welcome to The Flatus Show. I'm Ken Steffler, and Jose is taking a nap. We won't hear from him, not that we really have heard from him too much, but he is around every time I record a show. And so, today's show, earlier today I was sort of depressed. I was thinking, oh, I don't want to do this. But I do want to do it now because I want to explain something. Last night, my partner and I were watching the 4th season of 6 Feet Under, which I think is a terrific, terrific show. And we saw the episode, That's My Dog, I think it's called, where David is carjacked and... He's actually not carjacked. He picks up a hitchhiker, and it ends up being this horrifying ordeal. So, afterwards, we're getting ready for bed, and I was thinking to myself, you know, my father was like that. My father is a controlling, he's still alive, is a controlling person to almost that extent. He used to talk about Manson as being one of his heroes. He had this sort of, my father, that is, felt like there should be freedom in a way that, how can I describe this? He sort of like had this ideal of being a mountain man and self-reliant, and his big thing is to say, I don't care if you love me, just respect me. Now, a lot of this comes from his alcoholism, I realize. But nevertheless, my childhood was a Stockholm Syndrome. So that's what I was talking to John about last night. I was depressed today, just thinking about it, and how it has affected me and my decisions and so forth and so on. So what happened? So I get a call from my father, and he tells me, he goes, I'm going to send you $50 in a check, and you're to cash it and hold on to it, hide it. I'm like, well, why? Don't ask me why. So this is the start of the control. So we find out. After a little while, because we go back to chit-chat. He's drinking wine, by the way, while we're talking. He's not as drunk as he can be. And he says, well, I'll tell you why. I'll tell you what happened. Is I gave your brother $600, and Pat, his girlfriend, told me that, you know, Ronnie hasn't paid me back. Well, I don't know if that's true or not, but he feels now that he has to give me and my sister $600. But he can't afford to give us, you know, $200 at a time. He has to give us checks for $25 or whatever and make us hold on to them. So I basically said, you know what, keep your money. You probably need it. Have a nice day. I love you. He's like, no, I don't need the money. I've been saving my money and I don't need it. Now, this is the same man who left our house fall to pieces. The roof was rotting in. Eventually, the government came and seized it. You know, he's just irresponsible. So, I'm like, okay, whatever, then just send it. I'll just hold the checks. No, no, you have to cash them, and you have to stick them in a piggy bank until I tell you you can spend it. I'm like, well, I said, you know, if you're going to give me money, I'll spend it when I like. I'm 21 years old. I'm not going to play these games. And you know what? I said, and I finally just said, just keep your damn money. So he goes, well, I've been saving a lot of money. Oh, let me back up. He says, why don't you open up a safe deposit box and I'll have a key and you'll have a key. I'm like thinking, why? And he goes, and he continues and says, well, I have a lot of money I've been saving, and you know, when I die, you know, you can open up that box and, you know, there might be $1 million in there. Or, and I'm like laughing to myself at this point, but I'm trying to keep it, you know, silent. I don't think he heard me. Or there could be 50 cents. I'm thinking, how about nothing? So I was like, you know what, I'm not going to play your games. Finally, I just had it. Thinking about this control business and bullying and being kidnapped. I mean, being held hostage. I mean, I really was held hostage during my childhood. And, you know, oh yes, I had freedom to go to school and stuff, but it was being held hostage, because it was like you had to fight tooth and nail for anything. And I'm talking about anything. Clothing, food, and, you know, and if you got anything, you had to be really grateful. And yet other people, you know, their parents bought them, you know, school clothes. Well, this experience, I might tell you, my childhood experience, though unique, has had a troubling effect. However, I think I've suffered it pretty well and have adjusted, but nevertheless, it still makes me angry. So, that's my little rant about my father. Now for my next story about my grandmother. She was a backstreet abortionist in the 40s and 50s. And she came from a rough neighborhood in Kensington. And her parents came from France, I think, or Germany. It was French and German, so maybe one was French, one was German. I don't know exactly. It's all very hazy. And she used to give the local girls who got knocked up abortions. I mean, that's as simple as it is. And that's that. It's an odd thing. It's not like it was advertised. I didn't really know this as a kid. I found out later from an older relative, and this is after my grandmother died, but this is a reality, you know. I don't know how many other people out there who have grandparents who were abortionists, you know, before it was legalized, and she certainly wasn't a doctor, and I'm not really sure how she did it. I just know that that's what she did, so it's probably a coat hanger. Or something like that, or a drink, and I'll get into that later, because I wanted to also talk about a friend of mine who's much older than me, and she was 20-something in the 60s, and she got knocked up, and she came from a rich family. She got knocked up. Her father and mother, they're both wealthy. They owned a business, and they were the local Brahmin in their area. And her boyfriend was a doctor, I think, or going to a medical school or something like that. And it was decided that, you know, she wasn't going to have the baby. So this is what happened. She didn't fly to Sweden or another country. What she did is she found an abortionist in here in the area. And it's this woman, old woman. And she was an old woman. I mean, not that it makes a difference. It probably could have been a young woman, but in this case, she was very old, which is probably good because she probably knew what she was doing. And she, how it was agreed upon, what happened is that my friend was rented a hotel room, and when I say hotel room, this wasn't the Radisson. This is a, you know, like the Jism Motel, you know. It's like one of these places where the, you know, you rent by the hour. So she went to the Jism Motel, and she waits there, and the woman knows where she's at, knocks on the door, comes in, and my friend was told to, you know, take a warm shower. And then I believe at that point she was to drink this stuff. I don't know what it was, some herbs or... And it caused cramping. And then I believe, was that it? Was that just the drink or did she use something? I think at that point what happened was that they were given this... She was given this drink, if I can remember the story. And it caused the cramping, and she passed blood, and the woman examined it, and then it was the fetus, I guess. And then the woman left, and my friend was left there to clean up. And I suppose that if she hadn't, you know, passed the baby or the embryo at that time, she would have used a coat hanger or something. I really don't know. But it's not really important what she did. It's the fact that it had to be done in that way, and the fact that she had to, you know, rely on this woman who the hell knows who she is, you know? Apparently she was good. I mean, these rich people knew how to find a good abortionist. So that's what happened. And when I say rich, I mean they're not the Hiltons, but they were, you know, richer than the other mice in the village. So, you know, that's probably why she wasn't flown to Sweden or what have you. So this is all long before Roe versus Wade, except for my friend. She, that was, you know, maybe 6 years or so, if that. So, I hope Roe versus Wade's not overturned. I mean, personally, if I was a woman, would I have an abortion? I don't know, but it would be the most one of the most difficult decisions I'd ever have to make. And first of all, I don't have to necessarily worry about getting pregnant because I'm a man. And second of all, I'm gay, so, you know, only I don't have to worry about aborting children, but I really think, you know, there should be a choice, and it's not easy, you know, it can't be easy. If it is, I mean, the people would be really sick, and it should be available in a clean, sanitary environment. And not left to the means of my grandmother or that woman. Not that there's anything wrong with what they did. I mean, well, maybe they knew what they were doing. That's what I mean. So, and that's the story of my grandmother. Flash! Brenda Starr, you hear her? She's finishing up that report just for you. Okay, well... I haven't talked about Brenda Starr in a while, and the reason why is that it's hard to talk about Brenda Starr every week because there's only so many panels and so much information that is given. But Brenda Starr, as I had said before, was poisoned, and they were burying her. The woman who poisoned her was starting to bury her. And then her friend, Spiff, who's gay, and calls his friends Chiquita, he came and to and was talking to the woman who was burying Brenda Starr. That had stopped them from burying her any further, and basically saved, I guess, Brenda Starr in a little way, because it gave her the opportunity, more time, to revive. That doesn't make sense. It's hard for me to wrap my tongue around this. Spiff came, talked to the woman, the mother, you know what? You should go to www.comicspage.com and look up Brenda Starr and read it yourself. So, this is what I'm going to say. Is Brenda Starr is not dead. She came out of the grave that they're burying her in. And she got out, and they called the police, and they arrested the woman who tried to kill her. And I guess, you know, I don't know what I love about this comic. I started reading it, and I never really could understand it, because I would only look at it occasionally, so I'd see three panels, and I'm like, what does this mean, you know? You really don't know what they mean until you start reading it on a regular basis. And so that's that, as I say. So the gay guy, though, that's why I started reading it. There's this gay guy. And I really love it now because he calls everybody Chiquita. He's like, sweet something's Chiquita. So, now I call people Sharita. At work, I'm like, listen, Sharita. I also call people Taffy. So, you know, I was like, listen, Taffy. So, I don't know what it is. But I like Sharita. And I like that he says Chiquita. So, also Baby Doe. Also say, listen, Baby Doe. So sometimes I have little pet names for people. It could be anybody, not just one person. I could call, could start calling everybody Baby Doe. You know, and this is amongst, you know, friends or coworkers who know me. I mean, I'm not like a big flaming queen, but you know, it's fun. I even have the street boys saying, "Listen, Taffy." So now, okay. Let me tell you about straight boys. In all the places where I've worked, I've always worked with a lot of women. So, you know, there's things, if somebody gets pregnant, you have, you know, baby showers, wedding showers, and, you know, the whole kit and caboodle. You can imagine talking and stuff. So, recently, a lot of men came into the... Or, you know, there was a big turnover, new men, and men came in. Some of them were married, and you should hear them talk to each other about getting ready for the marriage and stuff. They're, I mean, almost as bad as women. No, that sounds awful. Sounds racist. What I'm saying is this, really, is that it's the same. Everybody's really the same. Girlish. In a way, talking about it, and planning, and doing this and that, and you know, I never really talked to them. Like, I didn't go to lunch with these guys. I talked to them in the office, but they huddle and they get together and they start talking. And you think they're talking about sports, but what are they talking about? They're talking about, you know, the wedding. So, and they have to talk about sports too, but. It's really amazing. I was really amazed at this sort of like tender side to straight men, which I didn't know existed. So that's like, I don't know, this interesting thing to learn, you know? So that's all. That's all for this segment. What's cooking? That's right, now for the cooking portion of the latest show. Welcome to the cooking portion of the latest show, and as you can hear, we're at the shore today. how fitting that the recipe will be baked Finnan haddie, which is a popular dish from the Gloucester harbors throughout the North Shore. So here's the recipe. Put a 2 or 3 pound fish in cold water and bring to the simmering point. Drain, remove skin and trim. Place in a shallow baking pan, pour 1.5 cups of milk over it, dot with butter, and bake in a moderately hot oven of 375 degrees. Baste occasionally with milk. Thicken the remaining liquid with flour and serve as a sauce with the fish. Doesn't that sound good? And I've been working out these past, the past 2 weeks. And I've been getting up at 4:15 every morning to do the workout. Work out for about half hour to 45 minutes. And I have to get ready. I have to get up so early because I commute to work. It takes a while, so I live. I have to leave here at 5:30. What a life. So I've lost 5 pounds, and I'm toning up. I can feel it. And that's that. When I lived in Boston, before I moved, I had joined gym, and I went there every day for like 8 months. I loved it. I never was very, was not a athletic child. Was bookish. I read books, and I did ride a bike with a friend a lot, which was good, but I was not athletic, and I had a tendency to gain weight. I was a very fat child. I was a blimp, so I know what it feels like to be fat, because my inner child is obese, and so I worked out at the gym. I had gained some weight, and because I had been thin, really thin, from like, I don't know, 11th grade, when I was in 11th grade, from 18 to 35 or whatever, 10 to 15 years. And it was, didn't gain anything, I could eat anything, do anything, and it was fine. And then I met my partner, and I guess we cocooned and had Haagen-Dazs, and I gained weight and stuff. And I don't think I'm obese, but it's like you want to lose some of the fat. So that's why I'm working out again. So, I had joined the gym to lose weight, and it wasn't athletic. I was sort of afraid. I loved it. Went there every day. I did the elliptical. Oh man, if I could afford an elliptical, not only in cost, but in not only in cost, but have a space for it. I mean, I would. That's the only thing I would use. But I don't have that space, so I have to do something else now. But I did the elliptical, I did some weight training, and I slimmed down. I looked good. I was 180 pounds, but I had like a 34 waist, and I felt so good. So, we moved. Where we moved, there's no gym, first of all, because it's the country, and there's a big long commute, so there's no time to do it in the morning. That's really the time I like to exercise. I've tried it in the evening, I just can't do it. So I've been exploring ways I could do it. So I've been trying, I found out about body weight exercise, just exercise with what I have. But I do use a couple dumbbells, and I have a Gazelle, which is not the best machine. I didn't pay a lot for it. It just takes up a lot of room. And it's good as a coat rack and a clothes rack. But I'm not very happy with it. I thought it was going to be more like an elliptical. But it's not. Because your feet go back and forth. It doesn't go up and down. So it takes forever to build up a sweat. And it's just, it's like, what's the point? But with the dumbbells and these squats I'm doing, I build up a sweat very quickly, and I'm huffing and puffing. I feel like I've really gotten something, like really get my blood flowing, and it's showing results after 2 weeks. So So that's what I've been starting. Now I'm cutting out sugars completely, any extra sugars, which is hard for me because I love to bake and I love desserts. So when I say I'm cutting out sugars, I'm cutting out refined sugars like cakes and cookies. I'm still eat fruit, and that's where I'll satisfy my sweet tooth. I'll have a peach or something, or a banana. And, you know, until a time comes when I can afford to let myself have a little chocolate mousse or something like that. But until that time, I'm, I have to just cut that out. And this past week was awful because my partner's niece had her 12th birthday party and she had cake and ice cream. Of course, I had to have a little bit. I was just like, please just give me a tiny bit. I can't eat it. And then the next day at work, one of the employees left and they had an ice cream cake for him. Well, isn't that special? So I was polite. I had a small piece. But it was just too much, you know. And I don't know if there's any connection, but I think the more sugar I eat, the more depressed I get, because I was really depressed after that. So that's another good reason to get rid of sugar for me, because maybe it does lead to depression. Maybe it just messes up my chemicals or whatever. So I forgot where I'm at, so I'm exercising. And anyway, here we're talking about the sugar, and this is another thing. I don't use sugar in my tea or coffee. I used to use Equal, and used that for years. And then, and I don't know if it's bad or not, but I hear that's a bad. You know, sweetener, causes cancer or whatever. So a couple years ago, I switched to Splenda. Been using it. Now I'm hearing awful things about Splenda. The fact that the Splenda molecule, though it may be made from sugar, that's what they say, is in the same shape as those chemicals like pesticides and stuff. So, and I say shape because shape is really important in chemistry. The shape of the molecule, the way they're connected, because everybody knows, or it's been said, that the Splenda molecule has a chlorine chemical, has a chlorine atom in it. And apparently Splenda said, well, though, this chlorine atom is like that in salt, sodium chloride. And, you know, sodium chloride, right, they're arranged a certain way, the atoms, and then the atoms are connected, and then they arrange themselves in a certain way to create a crystal, okay? And the chlorine atom does not break off and get absorbed through your body. I think that's the case with salt. However, the Splenda molecule is not like a salt molecule, and apparently the chlorine can break off and get absorbed in your body, which is a bad thing. So who knows what this Splenda consumption has done to my body, or what has done or is doing anything. Maybe nothing, but I don't like it. So as of today, I'm not going to have any Splenda or Equal in my sugar, or sugar, which I haven't had, in my tea or coffee. How I have heard about this product, it's made from a plant, and it's been used for, like, you know, 3,000 years by Peruvians called stevia. So I'm going to do some research on that, and maybe I could try that if I need to have a sweetener, which I can handle it without the sweetener. So we'll see. So I don't know what any of you guys have found out about these products, but that's what I found out.
You've been listening to The Flatus Show, featuring Ken Steffler and Jose the Poodle. You can reach me at kenty@kenstefflersmusic.com.